There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
major consequences for one of the drivers who not only left the scene, but was naked. News 5's Debbie Williams is live in Spanish Fort. And Debbie, this happened near Rockwell Elementary School.
We're about a quarter mile, Mel, from Rockwell Elementary School. We're at Highway 31, Old Highway 31, very busy road. And about 3 o'clock or just before 3 o'clock this afternoon, according to Spanish Fort Police Chief David Edgar, there was a minor fender bender, two cars involved. The two cars pull over to the side of the road, and then one of the drivers gets out, and he doesn't have any clothes on, and he walks away. That's a problem for law enforcement. They did catch him a little short distance away. He was taken to a local hospital to be checked out. There were no injuries in this accident, but the chief telling me that he believes that the person had a mental illness, and he's being checked out by medical personnel to get him cleared of that. Once he is medically cleared, though, he will face some substantial charges, leaving the scene of an accident and of disorderly conduct. So a very interesting afternoon here in Spanish Fort.
Never a bad time for Ray Stevens, huh? So we start off Midday Mobile on a Tuesday. Listen, I know there's probably serious components to it, and that's why we have a text line and email for you to complain to me. But I mean, when a news story about the ritzy and calm hamlet of Spanish Fort being affected by the streak. Yes, it's time for Ray Stevens. That's how we get started. All right, yeah, coming up on the show today, if we may talk more if there are more breaking news items in reference to the what I've heard referred to as naked Spanish Fort man. If there's breaking news, if something new pops up on this story, we will get you the latest here on Naked Spanish Fort Man. I know there's a lot of people intrigued by, you know, the latest breaking news on Naked Spanish Fort Man. And if we get it, we'll pass that along to you. All right. So that's on, not on the front burner, but we may have that in the warming drawer. Hey, coming up on the show today, hour number two of the show, and then we'll work backwards. We'll deconstruct. Hour number two of the show, we're going to replay the AL1 congressional debate from this morning. So if you did not catch it from 8 to 9 this morning, Alabama AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne was debating challenger Robert Kennedy Jr. And it's a hour long give and take between those two. We will replay that from 1 to 2 today. Okay, so 1 to 2 today, replay of that. Coming up, Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News will talk to us, and a lot to talk about with him. A subject I was talking about yesterday, are they developing some sort of graceful exit for Attorney General Jeff Sessions, Mobilian Jeff Sessions? Is it going to be some prompt firing the day after the midterms? Will it be something where he resigns in January, something in between? Or will this all be a bunch of smoke and there's no fire? We'll talk about that with Todd. And, of course, lots of state politics as we are now just a week away from Election Day. And so we'll talk about gubernatorial stakes. Also, this is getting in the attorney general's race. Wow. Wow, the people that have come out and that are coming out against Attorney General Steve Marshall and some of the different cabals out there, rolled this out. And it's interesting. It's interesting in the way a naked man running around Spanish Fort would be interesting. I mean, it's of note. You may not want to look at it, but it's of note. And that's kind of what it's like in this story about what's going on right now in the AG's race. So we'll get into that as well. Also, we'll get into the latest here on Maddox versus Ivy. That discussion will be part of the mix as well. And remember, we will put all this up in podcast form. All these interviews, everything we do, 40-some-odd hours a week of live local content, we put up, and it's available for you on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcast, and you can download it right there. Also, I guess we have come full circle now on RV City. As yesterday, the note came out from Mayor Sandy Stimson's office that RV City is not gone for this year. RV City will be there. Here's the rub. So I don't like changes either to Mardi Gras stuff. We're funny about that, right? We hold the, and so I get, you know, I when I hear a story about something changing with Mardi Gras, I get my feathers ruffled. But it does behoove all of us to look a little bit deeper. And by the way, the presser that came out from the mayor's office said, for Mayor Stimson, let me set the record straight. The city of Mobile has not made a decision to close RV City. Any reports that the mayor's office has permanently closed down RV City are false and should be disregarded. Mobile Fire Rescue has been working with the organizers of RV City on a plan to reorganize the campers to ensure emergency vehicles could access the area. Once the plans are finalized, we will review the proposal to ensure it is safe for our citizens. Our primary responsibility is always the safety of the public. All right. So the easy thing to do is what I think a lot of people in town did is, RV City, they're messing with our traditions. But it's not just, number one, it's being able to get, you know, some kind of presence there for if you had to get an ambulance in there or something like that, how could they do it? But number two, and the mayor talked about this yesterday, and this is the part that I don't think, you know, Mayor Stimson's getting attacked some places on social media, but people have not looked at the full story. And the full story is, not only do you have to get first responders in there to RV City, I think that's a fair thing to say, but also RV City sits where? Anybody? Right, under I-10. Under I-10. If there was a fire there, if there was a fire in the RVs, the flames go up to, that's right, I-10 on the overpass. Now, you can remember what happened when we had a section of I-10 come out. Remember one of those rolls of steel fell off a long bed truck about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and shut down I-10? And then let me challenge you to remember what happened in Atlanta. Dalton, was that this spring or not too long ago? Remember the story? There were transients, urban outdoorsmen living under a overpass there in Atlanta. And the story we heard is they had somehow gotten some PVC pipe to start burning. You know, obviously, you have to have something else starts the fire. It gets the fire, starts consuming the PVC pipe. The flames from there, and what was that? Was that I-75? I think it was I-75. A big section of I-75 was so damaged they had to shut it down in Atlanta because of the flames from underneath, from some PVC pipe. So if you have a jamboree, if you have the jamboree scrambler RV superstar catch on fire and it melts down some girders for I-10, I think that's a fair thing for the city to look at. Well, that's just me. Coming right back, Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, and we roll on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Naked Spanish Fort Man will also be an update, I'm sure, at our next newscast.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
The Winter Hill Gang, right? The Irish Mafia. Whitey Bulger dead in prison. Wasn't he the basis for that movie, The Departed? I think so. Whitey Bulger, I think. You've seen the movie The Departed, right?
I've seen The Departed. I thought it was Goodfellas. Maybe I was
No. He wasn't. I don't think, no, Goodfellas. But the, I think it was something, because, you know, he was state's evidence for a long time. I mean, mm-hmm. He was operating, but he was working with the feds.
Yeah, it looks like he was killed in prison in West Virginia, 89 years old. Bolger had been serving a life sentence for 11 murders.
Slip and fall? What happened?
They just know that he's been killed right now. So they're not saying...
killed?
Yeah, they are going as far as saying that Whitey Bolger was killed. They're not saying man found dead, but it looks like an actual prison murder. Whitey Bolger dead at 89.
There you go. All right. So breaking news right there. Thank you, Dalton. And I mentioned before we went to the news break, we get to talk to our buddy Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. And voila, here he is. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good. And as we get started to remind folks, Alabama Daily News, not just a website, but an informative email in your inbox. As somebody once, and I actually had two people stop me this weekend and said, hey, I took your recommendation. I do like it when I get up on a weekday morning and there's the news I need to know. So tell folks how to get your email.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, it's really easy. It's just aldailynews.com. A very simple site. But if you want to subscribe to the daily email, the daily news email, there's a subscribe button right there on the homepage. So just click subscribe. It's free. Give me your name and your email, and you'll get an email each morning running through the daily news. There was plenty to go through this morning, but each day we go through headlines both from here in Alabama, the state political scene, but also Washington, D.C., and what's happening around the country.
All right. I want to get into Alabama story with Washington roots, or Washington story with Alabama roots, however you look at it. And you said yesterday in an email, I get asked a lot what I think is going to happen with Attorney General Jeff Sessions. So do I. And, last week, national media was in town and they had contacted me. They're sniffing around on a story. And then a series of stories hitting yesterday about a possible exit for the Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Are there test balloons being floated, first of all, or is this something real? And then second of all, what do you think is going to happen?
I can't really blame people for asking that. I mean, you have to be living under a rock to not know that President Trump has been very frustrated with Jeff Sessions. It's been about a year and a half since that frustration has been there. It all stems from the, him not, or him recusing himself from the Russia investigation. Conventional wisdom is that, after the midterm, after this upcoming election, that would be the sensible time for Sessions to either step aside or for the president to make a change. So it makes sense. I don't blame anybody for asking me. The interesting thing is that nobody knows. I mean, really nobody knows except Jeff Sessions himself and maybe just a handful of very close people around him. I mean, two or three, maybe. That he keeps very close company, and nobody really knows what's going on. I will say it would make sense. And, why keep going? Why allow yourself to keep, dealing with this barrage? I mean, he's been beat up pretty bad by the president. But nobody knows. He's, when I talked to him in Auburn a few weeks ago, look, he was optimistic. He was excited. He was excited about the job they're doing, talking about the immigration work they're doing, talking about the supporting the police, cracking down on violent crime. I mean, he's doing the job he's always wanted to do. So, you hate to kind of, limit his time there in office, but there is a political reality.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one I've argued against, because if I look at the metrics here of implement, even though people say, well, he's not doing what President Trump wants, I don't know how there could be a better person to implement. Look at immigration. Look at, the president saying he's not doing a good job. Holy cow, compared to, the standard, let alone what it was for 8 years during Obama's AGs. I think it's an incredible job. But then again, I've told people this. I'm a homer. I'm somebody who likes Jeff Sessions. So with all that being said, I wonder about his departing, because if he is going to leave, the president hasn't wanted to, I'm guessing here, risk politically firing Jeff Sessions. Although I got to be frank, this is right here in his hometown. And I don't get the sense that there's a bunch of people that, if President Trump deems it so, then they would be for it. But if he didn't want to do anything before the midterms, then he could fire him the day after. But then there's this discussion, like you were talking about, of a graceful exit, maybe something in January. Is that something, in doing that, if there's a negotiation, Todd, each side is giving up something, correct, to meet, to make a deal. What is... President Trump give up? What does Jeff Sessions get up? Just what's your guess?
Well, the president would give up, you know, his gut instinct to try to fire people, right? I mean, this is the guy that got famous by saying you're fired. So maybe he would give up some of the dramatics. Although I would argue that he is better served through a graceful exit, I mean, but just in general. I mean, it doesn't reflect well upon the boss when there is a lot of drama and, you know, bloodletting in an administration. So I actually think he would be better served if it was graceful. And I think for Sessions, what you're giving up is the job. I mean, mm-hmm. I get no impression that he wants to leave or that he, you know, is you know, really eager to leave the job that he's always wanted. I think maybe there's a reality that it's going to come to an end one way or the other. So that's what they'd be giving up. But Sean, you're exactly right. By any just objective measure, Sessions has accomplished more or at least as much as any other cabinet official. You're talking about implementing the things that Trump ran on, immigration, enforcing the rule of law, you know, some of these things that were the very fundamental things that voters chose him over other candidates. Sessions has been the one implementing those and doing it, you know, taking the brunt of the media criticism for it. So, you know, he's been pretty effective in the job. There's just one thing. It's the Russia mm-hmm. investigation.
Original sin. Yeah.
Right. And I don't look, anybody that was connected with the campaign was going to have to recuse themselves from the Russia investigation. And you know, so I never thought that was a valid criticism, but it doesn't really have to be, does it?
No, but I wonder if, and this is, once again, this is just all pragmatic, not idealistic out of me, so I'm going to play the game here. If I am the Trump administration, don't I have to build up my case? I don't have to do anything, but it would behoove me to build up my case on how Jeff Sessions is not doing a good job at AG. So if he is fired or he leaves, it maybe deflects some of the attention from the recusal in the Russian investigation.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And the most intense criticism Sessions has come under has been as a part of this border situation, right? The zero tolerance policy. We've got another caravan coming to the border now, and if it doesn't go well, if there's a lot of chaos at the border, that could create, you know, a scapegoat, you know, in mm-hmm. Sessions to say, you know, okay, well, now is a convenient time to let you go. You know, I think that would be unfair just because this is what Trump wants. I mean, he's the one out there tweeting, you know, don't come to the border, we're going to send you back. So it may be unfair, but that's a really good point that sometimes in politics you like to create these, you know, sort of scapegoats and kabuki theater to do things. But, you know, we'll see.
All right. I want to talk about, as we're talking about the president, let's talk about the vice president. Mike Pence is in Alabama today. What gives here?
That's right. Well, this is a makeup trip. You know, he was scheduled to come a few weeks back. That's when Hurricane Michael came through. He was actually scheduled to go to Alabama and Georgia. Hurricane Michael disrupted all of that. He's here for a NRSC fundraiser. That's the National Republican Senatorial Committee. That's the group that goes and raises money for Senate races all over the competitive Senate races all over the country. We don't have one here, obviously, but Birmingham is one of those cities, you know, that's a popular fundraising destination for Republicans. So they're getting people to donate so that the NRSC can you know, finish the job in places like Florida and in Tennessee and in Missouri and some of these really competitive seats that Republicans really want to win. It's coming a few weeks late, but man, I haven't been in some of those states before. I can tell you, last minute money is really desperately needed, and so I can tell you it will be well spent.
All right, just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey with Alabama Daily News, and your chance to go to the front page of the website and sign up for the email delivery, which I so dig. When we come back, we'll talk more about some politics right here in the state of Alabama, fully, entirely in the state of Alabama, and the Attorney General's race, questions around this. The people have lined up now and are coming out against the Attorney General Steve Marshall in this. Pretty interesting. And we'll walk through this funhouse when we return with Todd Stacey. Also, give you more on voter rolls up in the state of Alabama. And Governor Ivey banking those dollar bills, y'all, as she heads towards Tuesday.
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile. Coming up at 1:05, we will replay this morning's AL1 debate. Congressman Bradley Byrne, challenger Robert Kennedy Jr. So you didn't catch it at 8 this morning. We'll replay it from 1 to 2 today. So put that on your to-do list. And thank you all the people that corrected me there. The Whitey Bulger movie, Black Mass. So there we go. That guy. That's the Whitey Bulger that was the breaking news there. Killed in prison. All right, and talking to our buddy Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News. It's aldailynews.com, where you, I mean, pretty easy. Even I could sign up for the email newsletter months and months, actually, like almost a year ago. So if I can do it, y'all, anybody can do it. So tell people what to do.
That's right. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the main website. And right there on the homepage, click subscribe. Enter your name and email. It's free, no cost at all, and you'll get a daily email from me with a rundown of the day's news. Today, I think number two was the Attorney General's race, and it got a little hairy.
Yes, I mean, so you reference our buddy John Sharp from AL.com story that starts off this way. Roy Moore's son and his attorney are calling on voters not to support Republican Attorney General Steve Marshall on November 6th. In a robocall circulating Monday and in a Facebook video released Friday, both Caleb Moore, who has been in the news himself a time or two, and Montgomery attorney Melissa Isaac call on voters to consider someone other than Marshall. Wait a second. What is this? These are Republicans, right?
Well, I mean, they say they are. I don't know. I mean, I've heard different things about Melissa Isaac. What we do know about Melissa Isaac is that she has represented Roy Moore in some of these lawsuits to fight back against the women that accused him. And of course, she was joined by Julian McPhillips. Now, he's definitely a Democrat. He's an old-school Democrat and has ties to the Siegelmans. But, you know, of course, the kicker, I mean, they, matter of fact, those two, McPhillips and Isaac, had a press conference last week, and nobody paid attention to it. I got the press release. It wasn't very interesting. But you bring Roy Moore's son into it, and, you know, voila, there's news. And, you know, I couldn't help but have just kind of a tongue-in-cheek reaction to this because, I mean, come on. All right. First of all, we've been through the RAGA stuff. The Republican Attorney General's Association, you know, has donated to Steve Marshall. That surprises nobody. But they're saying it somehow violates state rules. You know, judges have ruled otherwise. Secretary of State said otherwise. But whatever. They keep kind of bringing this, you know, accusation that these funds are somehow ill-gotten. Well, that's fine, you know, but you got to remember that anytime you bring in Roy Moore to a story, it just adds a whole different element. It kind of brings the circus, if you will. And so I thought John Sharp's reporting was pretty good, but I had to add on to it. I mean, look, you got to remember, the last time we heard about this RAGA issue was from Troy King.
Uh-huh.
And Roy Moore himself came out and endorsed Troy King in a campaign mail piece that was funded by Las Vegas casinos, which, I mean, you can't really get...
nice bedfellows, you know, yes.
You can't really get your head around. So what I said was, all right, if anybody had Roy Moore's son swooping in to support Don Siegelman's son in this year's election, if you had that on your bingo card, then I guess you win.
You're the big, yeah, you got the trifecta. Welcome to Alabama politics. I mean, because you pointed out here that you've got this video, and I'm just guessing, you know, I mean, it's Roy Moore's son. I don't know, you know, his what letter would be behind his name if he was running for something, but his dad's Roy Moore. You know, Caleb's often in the news for other things other than political angle, but you pointed out you've got, you know, Siegelman supporters sitting there with him as they're all Democrats and maybe Republicans ganging up against Steve Marshall over something. And basically it says to me that if it was Troy King or no one, right? It was Troy King or no other Republican to people in the Roy Moore camp. That, because, I mean, don't we go through this, that if you, in the primaries, your job is to fight it out, but if you're some true card-carrying member of a party, if your person doesn't win the primary, you then put your support behind the one that does from your party, right?
I guess so, but I mean, look, I've always had doubts about Roy Moore's, whether he was a real dyed-in-the-wool Republican or whether he's really more of a populist, know, as far as the issues go. So, I mean, take your pick on what you actually think. I don't think this really has to do anything with Republican or Democrat. I think they've got a real personal problem with Steve Marshall. I think it goes back to his days as a district attorney. I think that's where I don't know all about it, but I've been told different rumors and things that it's just way too strange for it to. I mean, why would Roy Moore agree to be funded by a casino, a slot machine group out of Las Vegas to support Troy King? You know, the two have never seen eye to eye on gambling. They have been constantly in conflict. Roy Moore has ruled against Troy King in the past on the issue of gambling. So for him to come out and support Troy King in the primary, that made no sense. So there's something very personal going on here. But the other thing is, I don't really think it means a whole lot. I don't, at this point, what I sense in the electorate is just a lot of fatigue when it comes to Roy Moore. I mean, kind of just, would this guy go away? And so I think when it comes to Siegelman, yeah, Siegelman's out there hitting Marshall on this, on campaign finance accusations and things like that. But I think this is the hug he probably didn't want. In fact, his former campaign manager came out in a Facebook post late yesterday and said, whoa, like this is not cool. You don't take support from Roy Moore. And he was saying that would discredit him among African Americans if that, got widely distributed. So kind of a double-edged sword for Siegelman.
Yeah, and I wonder, so your take on this, interesting, looking at it, we can maybe read from this that this is a enemy of my enemy is my ally. Maybe that's why, because these groups are so aligned against, even though they're strange bedfellows and should be enemies in themselves, their bigger enemy is Steve Marshall.
That's my sense of it. That's the only thing that makes sense. Because why in the world would Roy Moore or anybody associated with Roy Moore, who's supposed to be very conservative, why would they want to even risk a Democratic attorney general taking office? Why would they even risk that? If what he believes, if you just take Roy Moore at face value and his entire foundation for moral law and all that stuff, how conservative they want to be, moral stances on issues, and from abortion.
Yeah, that's
to
what I was
saying.
Abortion.
Stuff,
I would say abortion. How do they throw their support behind Siegelman and not Marshall? That's
absolutely.
Big. That's very big.
That is, yeah. So it's funny because some voters who maybe held their nose and voted for Roy Moore just because of the abortion issue. Now here is the Moore clan, if you will, saying not holding its nose and voting for a candidate they maybe don't like, but saying no, we'll actually risk things like abortion and other fundamental issues just because we don't like this guy. So, but again, I actually don't think it's going to amount to much. I think everybody in political circles is just kind of scratching their head, like, what is going on here? You tell you, Roy Moore's son is helping Don Siegelman's son? Okay.
Okay, and by the way, with your experience over the years, do you have any quick take? You have what the question is, pack-to-pack transfers, right? And says Alabama has a law against pack-to-pack transfers, but it doesn't apply to federal PACs or something. I mean, can you put it in Sullivanese, something I can understand?
So a pack-to-pack transfer ban is pretty simple. A PAC can give to a candidate, but a PAC cannot give to another PAC. And it is illegal to accept a contribution. A PAC just simply cannot take from a PAC. And that's how you eliminate the pack-to-pack transfer. You can't wash it through a bunch of state PACs. Now, it doesn't completely solve the problem because a lot of money can come into one PAC, which disguises the source and all that. But with the Republican Attorney General Association, look, that's a federal group. That's a big federal group that takes money, that raises money from all around the country. They host these big fundraisers, and that's their federal PAC, and then they donate to attorney general candidates. I mean, that's pretty simple. The Democrats have one that does the same thing. So what Democrats are arguing here, what Siegelman is arguing, and Troy King argued it earlier, was that, well, because the Republican AG's PAC takes money from PACs, then that amounts to a pack-to-pack transfer. But the state statute, I mean, the text, just the book, chapter, and verse of the state statute says that it only applies to state laws. It only applies to state pact. You cannot take a state statute and apply it to something in Virginia. You know, so they really don't have a case. In fact, the a judge up here in Montgomery, I mean, Troy King went to court to ask a judge to rule that this was, you know, an improper use of funds, and the judge threw it out in like 5 minutes. So there's not much of a case here. But again, this is politics. It doesn't have to be a case. You just
right.
You say these guys are taking dirty money, and that's enough.
Hey, just as long as it gets you through Election Day, and then if it actually, you know, bears any fruit, it doesn't matter. All right, coming right back. More with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. We're going to talk about the voter rolls in the state of Alabama are up. Say what? Yeah. So we'll get that. And also, it's Ivy, it's Maddox, it's the last week. What's Todd's take? We'll talk about it when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Check us out online, fmtalk1065.com. Get podcasts of the shows, show schedules, online opinion poll questions, three big things, top stories of the day, all that on the front page of fmtalk1065.com. Also find us Twitter at fmtalk1065, facebook.com/fmtalk1065, where you can watch the video of this morning's debate. But coming up at 1 o'clock, the audio of the AL1 congressional debate that happened at 8 o'clock this morning. We replay that here in just about 15 minutes. All right, and continuing our conversation with Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News. And the next step here, I guess, first of all, let's set this up as more people could be coming out to the polls. Almost 150,000 new voters have registered since the June primary to be part of the November 6th elections, which is, to me, Todd, a little bit strange because in midterms, you know, non-presidential cycle, the action really goes down in the primaries, right?
That's right. But, you know, I think you got a number of things. You got kids turning 18, graduating high school. I think a lot of that happens. You know, when you graduate high school, there's a big push to get registered to vote. But another part of it is campaigns. I mean, campaigns are out there, parties are out there, really working it to make sure that people who are not registered get registered. A lot of times that's people who have moved to the state. You know, you can go and buy a list of people who have just bought houses or, you know, new to the area, and target them and go and make sure they register to vote. Of course, this doesn't count the number of people who, you know, were dropped off the rolls. Every year, you know, people are ruled inactive. I mean, they haven't voted, you know, or did not respond to telegrams and things that came to their house. But yeah, 150,000 new voters on the rolls, that's from June 6th to today. So one thing that tells me is that any of this talk about, you know, voter suppression, yeah, I don't know if that's really legit. I mean, I think that's a pretty big number of new voters coming to the polls this year, and really even since the primaries.
And how does that shake out? Does it give you, I mean, if you say new voters, is there any sense there that new voters may be better for Democrats, or is that not, you know, for Alabama? I mean, you know, you could sit there in another state and say, oh, they got a bunch of new voters, maybe they're young, that's good for Democrats. But I don't know you can make that case here, or can you?
I don't have enough information to make that case. I think in general, younger voters are going to go for Democrats. There's a margin there somewhere. It's, in Alabama, it's probably not as great as it is in other states. You know, but it's not just younger people. You're talking about new residents. Where you're getting the most amount of growth is North Alabama and Huntsville there, as people are just, you know, flocking there, a lot of federal jobs coming in. And of course, down there, Mobile and Baldwin counties are growing like crazy. So, you know, I don't know enough to know who it might help and who it won't. But generally, if it's younger people, they tend to vote Democratic.
Also, let's talk about this. Then the big one on the ballot a week from today, And that is, of course, a gubernatorial cycle. Governor Kay Ivey, you point out here, has raised $146,000 just last week to Walt Maddox's $45,000. Now, I had him on the show, had Walt on the show with me last week. I mean, he sounds good and confident, like he's onward to victory, as any candidate should, but whether it's the dollar voting or the polling, it still doesn't look very good.
I think he, and I didn't hear the interview, you know, of course I rode around with him that day, right, and I got the same sense of confidence, you know, and of course, what's he going to say? Is he going to go out there and say, we're folding it up? No, they need to exude confidence going into this life. You know, nobody wants to back a loser. Everybody wants to back a winner. And you want to think that the person you're voting for at least has a chance to win. But, yeah, I mean, he's facing a tremendous uphill battle. I've got to say this. Their team has done pretty much everything right. I mean, I'm a big fan. I'm just a big politics fan in general. Of course, I've been working in politics all these years, but now I get to observe and not really be involved. And I've got to say, I've been really impressed with Ivy's team. They've played mistake-free baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done the job, and part of that is making sure not to lose track with fundraising numbers in any race where you're, you know, winning by 10 points or 12 points or, you know, your approval's in the 60s, there's always a chance that the money's not going to be there. Why would I need to, you know, donate to a campaign that's obviously going to win? They've done a good job of keeping that money coming in. And in this final week, that's where it really matters. That's where you're going to be getting all those ads up on TV. That's where you're going to do GOTV efforts to push those voters to the polls. It doesn't matter if the survey shows you up if you don't push your voters out. So that's where you're going to see the money really matter. So, yeah, the fact that she has, about $75,000 cash on hand more than Maddox does right now, that bodes well for her and all Republicans.
Yeah, and as we look at that, there are a couple things, and somebody's asked me on the text line when we would review it again, and tomorrow we'll go back through the amendments. That's another thing on there that, you've told me in the past that it makes sense. Sometimes those amendments are used to, even if the candidate, if they're so sure that, you know, if you're a Republican and you're so sure that KIV would win, you may not turn out. But maybe if there's an amendment you think is, you know, in question, that may get you to show up. And while you're there, well, bingo, you get to vote for the Republican. Or the same thing would be true with a different amendment for a Democrat.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you get yourself into a mind of a one-issue pro-life voter, meaning, you know, that's the one reason I go to the polls, is to make sure that I support candidates and support policies that protect the unborn. Well, it's really hard to get jazzed up about this midterm because there aren't any competitive congressional races. You're right about the top of the ticket. It's just not going to be very competitive. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not likely to be neck and neck. So, it's hard to really jazz me up as a voter. But if you tell me that there's going to be an amendment to the Constitution that you know, enshrines the sanctity of life in the Alabama Constitution, then, hey, maybe I've got a reason to go to the polls. And what happens is a lot of this voter outreach, whether it's the party, the pro-life groups themselves, maybe some candidates, even though they're not supposed to coordinate, they'll go and reach out to the faith community, a lot of churches and things, to just remind people what's on this ballot. There's a pro-life ad that just started today, in fact. It's probably running on your show, reminding pro-life voters that there's this amendment out there. So, yes. Now, look, and we've talked about this before. I think that the authors of this had some very legit policy reasons why this needs to be in the Constitution. And if you talk to them, that's all they were after. But the timing is pretty good, too, especially for people like Kay Ivey, you know, who wouldn't mind a bump from pro-life voters.
There you go. For sure. Todd, as always, we appreciate your time. Remind folks about the website one more time.
Hey, always glad to be here. It's aldailynews.com. Sign right up. Subscribe right there on the homepage. It's free. And, you know, give me feedback. Email me back and let me know what you're thinking of the news.
All right, good stuff. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. We always appreciate it. We'll check back with him very, very soon. Going forward, next hour, it's the congressional debate from this morning. If you missed it, Or if you want to listen to it again, it's coming your way in just about 6 minutes. AL1's congressional debate between Congressman Bradley Byrne and challenger Robert Kennedy Jr. That happens next right here on FM Talk 106.5.